RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
For nearly 5 years, both Shirley Waru, Te Rarua o Ngāpuhi and Te Uri o Tai and Anna Radford have been fighting to prevent ratepayer-funded Tupuna Maunga Authority from ridding their local maunga of exotic trees. Shirley's group, Respect Mount Richmond Otahuhu, wants to stop the authority from felling 443 trees there, 75% of the maunga's entire tree cover. In all, the authority plans to fell up to 2,500 trees on Auckland's maunga just because they aren't native. Anna, that's Anna Radford, leads Honour the Maunga, a group that occupied O Wairaka Mount Albert in 2019-20 to stop 345 trees being felled there. Even though the lack of public consultation around plans to fell these trees have been the subject of two successful judicial reviews, the tree's safety is by no means guaranteed. And if you've been with RCR for a while, you might remember, I think it was last August, I spoke to Avril Norman about what we called the tree wars back then. So if you heard that chat or remember it, and you can listen to it from the replays again from our website or app, you'll kind of know what we're about to talk about. So I want to welcome Shirley and Anna to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, Paul, for having us. And I would like to apologize for not making that interview with Avril. It was, I think, the day after our 60 trees were felled last year.
Yeah.
And I was pretty upset, actually. So.
Oh, yeah,
I'm glad I'm here today.
We called it tree wars back then. I don't know if we coined that or Avril coined that, but kind of was a war on trees, almost like a genocide on certain trees, dare to use that word. Is that being too hyperbolic?
It's easy to talk in war terms, and sometimes it does feel like, you know, we're at war with the authority, but I think it's really important to understand that nobody is against planting natives on Auckland's maunga, and no one's against the long-term plan, you know, to over time succeed to fully native vegetation. Where we all differ is the method of getting there, and that's the key point of difference. So, you know, we're both Shirley's group and my own and members of the public are concerned about the plans to basically mass fell the exotics in a short period of time, which will destroy not only trees and green spaces that people enjoy, but also if you think about all the birds and other wildlife that need those trees for habitat and food, where will they go in the, you know, 50 or 100 years that it might take for a replanted tree species, native tree species, to grow to maturity? So that's the key point of difference. Other than that, we don't have any issue with the authority itself or many of the other things they're doing, which are actually great on Auckland's maunga. It's just the point of difference is in the felling.
Shirley.
Yes. We just don't want to see the trees clear felled in a very short period of time. We've participated a number of times with submissions each year, and each time I have done a submission, I've asked them to wait to plant now and fell later. And my later is in 50 years' time.
Wow. Okay.
And my later is a bit different to that. Basically, it's like, let nature take the lead is where I personally am coming from, because it's really interesting when you go walking on the various maunga, and I'll talk about Wairaka, my local one, there are a plethora of native seedlings, self-sown ones, coming up under the protective shelter of natives and exotics alike. And you see quite a few examples on Wairaka where native trees have started to grow up over some of the exotics, and so, and we'll crowd them out and they'll die in time. So I think, well, let's look to nature. She's doing what she wants done there at the maunga.
Why do you think?
Okay. Sorry.
No,
sorry,
Shirley, you finish.
Yeah, no, Anna's absolutely correct. And when I've, you know, given that time frame, I've asked them to have another look in 50 years' time, and then decide whether they think it's a good idea or not such a good idea. Because we have the same seedlings popping up at Mount Richmond, and they all choose the exotic trees to do this because the exotics give them shade in the summer and light in the winter. We've got kamu, for example, and totara, and it's quite prevalent on the maunga.
Why do you think the Tupuna Maunga Authority is so driven then to carry this out? Because just thinking, hearing you talk about that time frame, 50 years, many of these people won't be around then, probably. So what, do they want to get it done for their own glory? Why be so kind of obsessive about it, do you think?
Anna, would you like me to go first, or would you like to go first?
You go first,
I can't really answer that, Paul. All we can do is look at their integrated management plan and, you know, all the other information that they have on their website. But I can only assume that it's a stance that many Māori are taking, where they're just very impatient and they want things done very quickly instead of being patient.
Well, there's some sort of symbol of something. An exemplar.
Well, it's an interesting one because they've never been, in my view, never been upfront about why they're doing it. I know when, they've said, I'll talk about Owaraka specifically, but, I mean, a lot of this would apply to the other maunga as well. Oh, there's lots of trees. A lot of them are pests. But then you look up the Auckland Regional Pest Management Strategy, and in Owaraka's case, a tiny handful of trees that actually don't seem to be self-seeding, I might add, are on that register. Oh, they're dangerous, but any tree's dangerous potentially, so that, you know.
Well, dangerous, what, because it could fall on you or something?
Well, and what's more is we're not aware of any, or certainly at Owaraka, any health, you know, like proper health and safety assessment using internationally recognised standards. We're not aware of any of that having been done. They say, oh, they're blocking the tihi, or the summits are apparently sacred and need to be able to see each other. And they're blocking the view. But if you go up the top of Owaraka, it's not exotics blocking the view, it's Pahutukawa. So basically, nothing kind of adds up. And so they've never actually come out and said what the actual reason is. So, you know, Julie and I have been doing this for nearly 5 years now, and we're still really none that we can make guesses. But, you know, based on what they say, we're still none the wiser as to why they want to chop the exotics down.
We have to ask the question, is it because they feel that or they know that any answer they give will possibly not make sense and would be unacceptable?
I can't answer that them to say.
But we, in the absence of any answers, we can speculate. There'll be an answer somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, obviously people do speculate and have their views, but you know, I think it's time that the authority was upfront about exactly why they're doing this. And I might add, the authority, like, a lot of people don't understand what the authority is. So do you think it's worth me just spending a minute?
Yeah, I think it is. Absolutely.
Right. So I just have to give a little potted history. So in 2014, there was a treaty settlement that vested ownership of 14 maunga in a collective of 13 iwi and hapu. But they weren't given back like in a private property sense. The treaty settlement required that they be held on trust for the benefit of that iwi collective and the other people of Auckland. There was much more in the treaty settlement, but anyway, this is the maunga part of it. So the maunga can't be sold, they can't be, you know, developed or covered in houses, and they're to be there for the benefit of basically everybody. So the Tupuna Maunga Authority was set up. They don't own the maunga. They were set up to administer it on behalf of the iwi trust that owns it. And it's a co-governance body. So half of its members are iwi representatives and half are Auckland Council governing body and local board representatives to represent the two different sides. And one would assume that in an ideal world, you know, a co-governance body would be co-governing and take, you know, and basically administering whatever it is they administer on behalf of everybody's interests. But Unfortunately, it seems that the Auckland Council representatives have, for the most part, turned away from the communities they're supposedly there to represent.
Okay. You got anything to add to that, Shirley?
Yeah, no, I think Anna's summed it up pretty well, Paul. You know, I mean, everything's on their website. If any of your listeners want to have a further look at their narrative, but a lot of very important things that are part of the Māori culture are missing out of their narrative.
Okay, so what are they, Shirley?
The community, manaakitanga. They call themselves kaitiaki, but actually the kaitiaki in our case is the maunga, the trees, the birds, and, you know, insects and lizards and all the other life forms that are part of that, you know, the biodiversity in that environment. And so those elements are lacking. Also, from a Māori perspective, we do not differentiate between species in the environment.
Yep.
We actually look at the environment as a whole, and that isn't happening within the Te Puna Maunga Authority narrative. Their focus is on the maunga. Their focus is on their own people, their own tūpuna, which are very, very important. But because of the type of treaty settlement that they got and the co-governance arrangement that they entered into, they promised that these spaces would be our parks and reserves. And that's kind of what we're fighting for, Paul. We're fighting for our parks and reserves and all the amenities that we get as members of our community, and the amenities that the trees and birds get from that amenity as well.
Okay, what over the next 100 years, okay, we could all be here, I don't think I will be, to watch everything regrow. What are they proposing to plant and what could it look like?
This is a very interesting one. There's quite a lot of, I guess, smoke and mirrors. And what I wish journalists would do is actually ask questions of the authority, because people take things at face value. So the authority talks about, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of plantings across the Maunga, and it sounds all very impressive. But let's unpick some of that and what it means and what that would look like for Maunga. So, again, I'll talk about Oaraka because that's my local one. It's the one I know the most about. The authority, if we hadn't intervened, would have felled 345 healthy mature trees, which is just under half of that Maunga's tree cover. And they say, well, we're going to plant 13,000 natives. And that sounds amazing. And you kind of have this image in your mind, you know, that the Maunga is going to be cloaked in green, but it's not. The 13,000 are mostly grasses, flaxes, and shrubs, not species that would grow to tall trees. In fact, a very small handful are. And 13,000 still sounds amazing until you compare it with Turituri Matangi. Now, the plantings, the revegetation there, covered about 60% of Turi, and they planted between 250,000 and 300,000 trees there at Turituri, you know, the Turituri organisation. So if you extrapolate that for Owairaka's size, you take the island's size difference into account with the land around Mount Albert, you would need to plant up to 132,000 plantings at Mount Albert, Owairaka, to compare with Turi's plantings. So that really puts it into context when the authority says, oh, we're going to plant 13,000. It's actually not that much, and it's mostly little stuff, and it's mostly around, it's all around the lower slope. So the intended effect would be a bit like Mount Wellington, a bit like a monk's tonsure, where you get a bald top and then a ring of low-growing stuff around the bottom. And so that's actually the intended effect of bare-looking maunga.
Like a guy with a bald head and a bit of hair around the
Exactly. And maybe with a bit of a comb over if there's a few native trees still left sitting on top.
Why do you think there's this resistance, or I don't know what the word is, to trees, actual trees? Because trees are beautiful, right?
Yeah. There's this ridiculous narrative, not only in this country, it's in other parts of the world too, where native equals good, non-native equals bad. And it's a really simplistic binary which ignores the fact that nature is always changing. I mean, if you take eucalyptus, fossil records show that eucalyptus used to grow in the Otago area, you know, like millions of years ago, and then the climate changed and they stopped growing there. And so nature's not a static thing. If you look at the birds on the Moonga, they're not all just huddling in the native trees. No, they love the flowers that the exotic trees, you know, bring in the wintertime and so on. So I think this ridiculous native, good, exotic, bad is not a helpful binary in any sense because, you know, there's always shades of grey in everything.
Yep. Especially if there's shelter, shades of grey.
But the tui doesn't. The tuis and the kereru, they don't care. Yeah. All they want is something to sit in and eat. You know.
Mm. Yeah, and they make good choices.
Yeah.
Sorry, Shirley, I sort of interrupted
so
you.
So, Paul, in our judicial review, we have 75% of the trees that are on our mountain are exotic. I think it leaves 150 natives if all of the exotic trees are cleared. And part of our argument was that the exotic trees didn't need to come down for the planting to occur. Most of our planting at Mount Richmond is on a rugby league field that they actually took. Which was another bone of contention for the community because, as in every community, we have a great shortage of fields for people to use. But, that was one of our main arguments, that it was just totally unnecessary for the exotics to come down for Te Puna Maunga Authority to achieve their goal of revegetating the Maunga with nature. And again, at Mount Richmond, the same as at Wairaka, there are very few trees being planted. We're pretty much a copy and paste of the original resource consent for Wairaka at Mount Richmond. So if the trees come down, our maunga will be totally bald. There won't be any trees there. The first lot that came down in 2018 was a cliff face was cleared and there was a very large grove of olive trees on it. I think there was sort of an excess of 100, but they weren't accounted for officially because they were considered a pest.
Right.
Okay. But our moorpork lived in those trees. That was their perfect habitat.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
And when those trees were felled, the moorpork left. I have seen one moorpork on the Maunga since, a family that share a boundary with the Maunga assure me that we do still have moorpork there, but I'm not hearing them myself when I go for my very early morning walks.
Yeah. Well, I know there have been two successful judicial reviews, but the tree's safety still not guaranteed. Have you come in for any personal angst in your campaigning on this? What have you been called?
Yes, it's been very challenging. I'll go first and then I'll let Anna go and give you her story of Wairaka. It's been very costly. It's been quite humiliating at times and degrading for not only myself but my community as well. I have been called a racist.
Really?
I have been called a plastic Māori.
Oh, man.
I have been criticised for the way I pronounce my Māori words. And I think the latest is that I'm a puppet. But I'm getting on in age. I too will not be around in, 50 years' time to see what happens if we can find a solution where it will be a very, very slow succession of trees being felled.
Why do you think you would call those things? Because they're really insulting, actually.
I don't really know the answer to that, Paul. I never respond.
But that would give you an indication of the mindset behind it.
I think that insults like that come from very angry Māori. That's the only word that I could really use.
Yeah. Any more to say about that, Shirley? Sorry to hear
no,
about that.
No, I'll let you tell Paul, your experience over at Ō Wairākei and
yeah, well, I'm Pākehā, and so when the Ō Wairākei tree thing all blew up, we occupied, like, it was a decision made by a group of people in the community on the spur of the moment. Most of us had never done anything remotely like that before, and so there was a big media storm, and unfortunately, some groups or individuals with views around treaty issues that weren't aligned with ours tried to hijack our cause and put, anti-treaty leaflets in local letterboxes, and had nothing whatsoever to do with us. But the authority seized on that and many other things that went on and took every opportunity they could to position our group in there by me as its leader as being racially motivated, and a lot of the mainstream media just lapped it up. They didn't bother to check the facts. And so
we know that one here at RCR well.
Yeah, exactly. So so for myself, but I'm not coming from that place whatsoever, it was and continues to be hugely personally distressing. I cried many a tear over it, but I also was aware that that those accusations were being used in an attempt to silence us, because Pākehā people who aren't racist and try very hard not to be, I mean, the worst thing you can do is to call them a racist, and so it would normally shut people up. Yep. And I became aware of that's what the game was, and I thought, well, actually, I'm not coming from that place, and I'm not going to be silenced. And so I push back on it in a number of ways. And it's been really interesting because as time has gone on, nearly, 4.5 years has passed now, I've noticed that the authorities stopped pushing that line quite so hard these days, because I think they've just realised we ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's a real shame, because racism absolutely, absolutely exists in this country as it exists everywhere. But to misuse that term, either in this context or others, actually debases what it actually is and creates a cynicism around the use of that term that actually doesn't serve the wider purpose of addressing it well, because people just end up hunkering down and bunkering down over it.
Yeah, well, you're new to the word in the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens next? What's next?
Well, we've got quite a long road ahead of us, but with the decision for Mount Richmond, we won on the point of loss of amenities. So out here, we're a low socioeconomic area, quite diverse in, the cultures and various religions that people come from, but predominantly Māori and Pacific Island people, where high density intensification under the Unitary Plan. We have the lowest tree canopy in Auckland, which is 8%. And if, we lost the trees, we would lose our respite from the surrounding area, which is predominantly
the concrete
commercial
jungle.
Industrial. Yeah, it is. We would lose our amazing urban forest where we get to go and walk in amongst mature trees every day. We've got 17 and a half hectares there. It's quite a gem, actually. We would lose our birds, and I really am not quite sure where they would go because of the fact that we have the lowest tree canopy in all of Auckland.
They'll probably ship out to somewhere else, Shirley.
I guess, Paul. I mean, that's what people from DOPS say, that they'll just find another tree. I think Tupunamonga Authority says...
They'll just find another tree. Don't worry about it.
Says the same thing, but the tree loss in our area has been quite significant, and Mungkiakea is on our boundary. Our mountain actually stands in their local board area rather than our local board area. But so in the LIDAR report, we were down to 8%, and Mungkiakea is only 10%. So if you consider that One Tree Hill is in there, you know, they've got a concern about the tree loss as well, which is coming down for development and car parking and, you know, whatever other reason they're felling trees. I think the numbers are quite great.
Sounds like a good business to be in around there. And Anna, we're finishing up now. Any last words?
Yeah, look, this isn't over. Shirley's had a great result, but what it's done is it's, in setting aside the resource, non-notified resource consent at Mount Richmond and the same ditto with Wairaka, it's bought the trees time. But, you know, the authorities intends to do what it's doing. And so what I would encourage is that anyone listening to this, like, engage with your local council member. They vote the budget for this nonsense to happen. If there's submissions with the annual, you know, budget rounds and things like that, or if you hear about it, calls for submissions through either my group or Shirley's, put in submissions. It's easy to lose heart and think, well, they don't listen. But if you don't say anything, then that gives them license to say no one cares. So I think that's the best thing, is keep this issue live. Keep talking to your local representatives. Keep putting in submissions. Because if we don't, then they'll just say, well, no one cares, we'll chop them down. You've got to keep, you know, advocating for the trees. And Shirley and I are never going to stop. Well, not while we're still standing anyway.
No.
All right, that was really interesting. I want to thank Shirley Waru and Anna Radford. They've been fighting to prevent ratepayer-funded Tupuna Maunga Authority from ridding their local Maunga of exotic trees. Good to know where things are, and thanks for coming on RCR to explain it all.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks for having us.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.